OTU.com, the home of quality podcasts.
Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams.
Hi, and welcome to episode 200 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com. And I'm sorry to say, try as we might, we just could not get Shelton lined up for this episode. We tried and he was so keen to do it. But things just conspired against him. So anyway, it's just me on my ownsome, as per usual. So anyway, big milestone. Happy to have reached 200 episodes. It's taken us a little longer than it should have. If we were really doing it weekly, then it would have only taken 4 years, not 6.5, but there you go. So anyway, I've got a few things lined up for this episode. So I'll just dive right on in. First thing, I saw a great link on Facebook through the week, and I can't remember who posted it now, and my apologies if you're still listening, because it's obviously one of my Facebook friends. You can shout out and say, hey, that was me. Anyway, it was a link, which I will post in the show notes, to this great blog. The guy lives in Helsinki. He's a professional photographer. He's been in the game for, you know, 40-odd years. And the post was all about going professional with your photography. And, you know, obviously this guy's got an entire career behind him now, and but he wrote just a unique take on it that I'd not heard anyone else explain. And I shall paraphrase and condense the concept of what he spoke about, but I'll give you the link because it's worth a read, particularly if you know, like me, trying to, instigate a career change. Basically, he said, I'm going to tell you about a bus station in Helsinki. And he said, basically, there are a whole bunch of bus routes that leave from the bus terminus. And many of those routes share the same path for, you know, maybe a few blocks, maybe a few kilometers, you know, whatever, but eventually they diverge and go onto a unique path that no other bus route takes. And he basically said this is like, you know, moving into photography. He said when you first start to get noticed by your peers, by the industry, you know, by potential clients, no matter what style of photography you are doing, whether it be portraiture, whether it be landscapes, whether it be real estate photography, it doesn't matter what genre of photography you're in, people are going to say, you know, what you're doing has been done before. You know, and they'll rattle off the names of all the greats who came before you. And he said the easy trap to fall into is to spend 2 or 3 years going down that path and go, well, I'm just wasting my time here, you know, because it's all been done before. And, you know, going back to square one, rethink your strategy and decide, okay, rather than doing that style of photography, I'm going to go and do this style of photography. And he said, and it's essentially like following that bus route for the first couple of kilometers and then going, well, this is pointless, it's all been done before, there are other buses on this route, so I'll take a cab back to the bus station and I'll hop on another bus. He said the only way that you will develop a style of your own is to just keep going. As he said, stay on the effing bus, right? Because you will get to a point where, yes, you will have plagiarized either deliberately or, you know, unintentionally the works of the photographers who came before you and who inspired you, but you will get to a point where you start to develop your own style that simply evolves out of your own personal experience. And eventually, you know, you start moving off in new directions and taking things in, you know, going into the nooks and crannies that probably haven't been explored before. It's just a great post. That's essentially the nuts and bolts of it, but I highly recommend it as a read. It was just a great analogy, you know, the idea of these, you know, bus routes that share a common path for a little while and then eventually, I guess, develop a unique identity, as it were. So anyway, I'll post that that link on the show notes for you. So if you want to go and check it out, please do so. I got an email from Susan Menace, who's been a listener to Shutters Inc. for quite some time, and she said, "Dear Bruce, good wishes for the forthcoming 200th episode of the Shutters Inc. podcast, one of my favourite podcasts. I particularly like that you represent the audience. At least, it seems that you ask the sort of questions I have on my mind a lot of the time. Congratulations, and here's to many more episodes to come." Well, thank you, Susan. I appreciate the good wishes. Of course, there's not me asking too many questions these days because it's me on my own. Unless, of course, I have a guest, and then I tend to be the one asking the questions. But, yeah, kind of, well, maybe it's the same, maybe it's not. I don't know. But anyway, I appreciate the email. Thank you very much. And then I got a message from Kane. And Kane, please forgive me if I butcher your surname, Tietzel, who is one of the co-founders, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Kane, of photomerchant.com.au. He sent me a message on Facebook just today, actually, asking me about library management of your photos in Lightroom. And I'll read out the message that he said. He said, "Hey, Bruce, I just migrated my entire photo library into Lightroom 4 from iPhoto and have now got 12,000 plus photos to add metadata to and have to resort from scratch. Do you know of any good resources to help me get started? I need to fix my backlog and start some new best practices. Would love your advice if you can share some links. Cheers." Wow. Okay, Kane, I will, you know, be upfront with you. I don't use a Mac, so I have no idea what iPhoto is or is not capable of. I would assume that there is some metadata there, and I don't know of any, you know, way to expedite the translation of that metadata from iPhoto format to Lightroom format, but I will have a hunt around. If I find any links, I will post them in the show notes for you. But I don't know of anything straight off the top of my head. As for best practices, there are a couple of things that I would suggest with regards Lightroom 4. One is that, well, for a start, when you set up a new catalog, one of the things that I do like about Lightroom 4 is when you go menu, new catalog, it presents you with a dialog box and it asks you to enter a name for the catalog. What is not necessarily clear, unless you've already experienced this, is when you put in a name for that catalog, let's say you called that catalog 2012 because you were just going to put all the photos you shot this year into that catalog. What happens is whatever folder you are currently inside of in that new catalog dialog box. So let's suppose you're on, you know, D drive / and you're in the root of the D drive, right? I would highly recommend that you set up a master folder for photos, which is what I have on my F drive. So it's F:// photos. So when I go new catalog, I browse to F:// photos folder. And in that new name field, if I was to put 2012, what happens when I press create or start or whatever the button is, because I don't have it in front of me right now, Lightroom actually creates a folder with that name and then puts the catalog file alongside that folder. So the intention is that when you import your photos, it will put the photos into the folder of the same name as the catalog, if you follow my drift. So if you've called the catalog 2012, the folder 2012 is where all of the photos will go when you import them. Now, when you bring up the import dialog box, right, so you've taken your CF card or your SD card, whatever format you're shooting on, out of your camera, put it in your card reader, and assuming your Windows machine is set to automatically detect the insertion of a, you know, a memory card, the little box will pop up saying, what do you want to do with this new device that you've just inserted and added to the system? Amongst the options will be import photos into Lightroom, because it will detect that there are image files on the, you know, CF card, and so it will offer Lightroom as an option. If you select that option, what will happen is Lightroom will launch and the import photos dialog box will automatically come up over the top of the main Lightroom GUI. And in that dialog box, you've got a few options. On the left-hand side, you'll see you've got the option to choose a different source if you happened to, you know, want to import some photos from another source other than your recently inserted CF card. But generally, it you know, opens with that already selected because Windows detected that you inserted the card. Across the top, you've got some options. Copy as DNG for a digital negative. Straight copy, which is generally what you'd use if you're importing from a CF card. Move, if you just want to move photos from some other folder into a more permanent folder location. Or add, which will leave the photos in their current location, whether that be another folder on your computer or on the CF card. Not sure why you would do that, but the option is there nonetheless. Then on the right hand side, you've got the destination for where the photos are going to end up. Now, if you go to the fourth tile down called destination and open that particular tile up, what you'll see is that there is a checkbox for into a subfolder. So you can designate a specific subfolder name if you want to. And the next option is organize. And you have the choice of either organizing by date or organizing by just chucking everything into one folder. Personally, I love the concept of sorting by date. That way you at least end up with all of your images cataloged in chronological order, or at least the folder structure represents the chronological order of when things were shot. And you'll see under date format, there's a squillion different ways to represent those folder names. Now, we could argue till the cows come home about what should be the way the world expresses the date format. This is the one area where I actually think the Yanks got it right. And very few Australians agree with me, right? The concept of expressing date as 4 digits for the year, 2 digits for the month, and then 2 digits for the day of the month, to me, that is golden. And the reason I love that particular format is because, let's assume that I do one shoot on the 1st of January, and I do one shoot on the 1st of February, and I do another shoot on the 1st of March. If I do it the Australian way, which is to go day, then month, what happens is the 1st of January shoot gets filed first, then the 1st of February shoot gets filed second, then the 1st of March shoot gets filed third. And if I shoot on the 2nd of January, that ends up as the fourth folder in the list because it's 0201. So I personally feel, you know, the idea of going year, then month, and then date actually makes more sense, because everything from 2012 will be under 2012, then everything from January will be under 01, and then the days will be in chronological order under 01, and then the February shoots will be under 02. So anyway, that's just my soapbox. That's up to you entirely as to which particular date format you want to choose, but I highly recommend using the date format. And the thing is that, as per your original question, if you add metadata for every image as you import them, it becomes irrelevant that, you know, you might not be able to identify what a particular shoot was by looking at the actual folder structure in Windows, because all you see is the date. If you've got all your metadata, you know, in the form of keywords alongside all your images, then it just becomes imminently searchable inside of Lightroom. And to me, that is just a godsend. So let's assume you've imported your photos. We're still in the import dialog box. So we've set up the destination to be organized by date and date format as per your choice. I personally use the option which is /year-month-day, because what that does is, like I said, puts it into a master folder for the year and then a subfolder which has year-month-number-day-number as the folder name for all of the photos shot on that day. Okay, hope you're with me so far. All right, so the other options on that right hand side: file handling, you can choose your render previews. I leave that on standard, it's up to you. You can choose one-to-one previews if you want, but it does take a hell of a lot longer to import your photos. Don't import suspected duplicates is a great one to have checked, so that once you have imported your images once, if you have that checkbox ticked all of the time, Lightroom won't ever bother re-importing the images, which is quite handy. And you've got the option there to make a second copy if you really want to. File renaming. Personally, I don't. Because I am so manic about adding keywords to every single image, I don't feel the need to rename things. Even if I shoot a wedding, I don't bother renaming the files to, you know, Shazza and Dazza's wedding. I just don't see the point. But if you want to, by all means, go right ahead. And options are there to customize the way that is done. Apply during import. I personally like this option of setting up a metadata preset. You'll see that second option there, metadata. If you click on that, you'll see the ability at the bottom of the dropdown to edit presets or create a new preset. Definitely do that. If you're serious about, you know, your photography and, you know, I mean, just go in there and have a look. You'll understand why it's not a bad idea to set all that stuff up. You can set up things like copyright, the year it was shot. You can put your name in there as the image creator. You can embed your website address. You can embed your email address if you want it. There's so many options that you can set up for basic metadata that shall be added to every single image you import into your library. Totally worth doing. Doesn't mean you need to fill in every single field, but, you know, just go through and look at all of the fields that are available and go, yes, these are things that I do want every single image of mine to have, you know, like my website and a copyright and a, you know, whatever. So you'll work it out. And there are develop settings there as well, and you can choose to apply presets that have already been created in Lightroom, either that shipped with Lightroom or under the user presets, developing presets that you've chosen for yourself, or third-party presets that you've gone and paid for. So if you want to assign, you know, a particular type of look to an entire shoot, you can do it at the importing stage by choosing the develop settings. One of the things that I have done with my Alpha 850 is shot a series of test images at all the different ISO ratings. Okay, with my 850, I'm pretty happy to shoot up to 1600 comfortably, 3200 at a push. 6400 I don't like shooting at because it does get pretty nasty. But the great thing about Lightroom is the noise reduction, the noise reduction engine in ACR is so damn good that I can actually shoot at 3200 reasonably comfortably. And so what I did with this, all these test images that I shot at different ISOs, and I deliberately shot them in different lighting situations where there was good light or minimal light, you know, so got some shadows at high ISOs so that you really see the noise start to appear. And what I did was I went into the develop module and set certain amounts of noise reduction for each ISO rating of my camera, of my Alpha 850. And so I saved them as A850 NR 400 ISO, A850 NR ISO, you know, 800 ISO, 1600 ISO, 3200 ISO. So I've got this basic noise reduction setting for each ISO rating for my camera. And so that's one of the things that if I'm importing a mass of photos and, you know, let's say that I was shooting something where I was forced to shoot at 1600 ISO because I was working in low light and I couldn't use flash, what I can do is I can apply that ISO noise reduction during the importing process. So it's just one less thing I need to worry about when I get to post-processing my images. Okay. You've seen, you know, I've just talked through a few of the options available in this import dialog box. To make it even better, right down the bottom in the middle, you'll see import preset and you'll see none. And you can actually save everything that we just went through, like the destination, the file renaming, the file handling, the metadata preset, the develop preset, all of that as an import preset. You know, so if you're really wanting to automate things till the cows come home, you can save it as an import preset. You know, and it might be that, you know, I guess they've really thought this out for every type of photographer. You know, if there are certain styles of shoot that you do, which always require exactly the same kind of handling at the ingest or import stage, you can save everything as a preset, which I think is just absolutely fantastic. So that's the import dialog box. Now, the one thing I haven't talked about is the keywords field. And I know, Kane, you were hanging out for me to cover this again. I spoke on the CPW stand at PMA last year. I did a talk about the keyword capabilities within Lightroom. One of the things that I really love about keywording in Lightroom is that you can do what are called hierarchical keywords. And the way it works is, let's say I'm importing, well, as I'm recording this podcast, I'm sitting here looking at my screen, I've got the import dialog box open, and as it happens, I've got a CF card in the card reader with a whole bunch of images of Kath, which I just shot this evening because she just had her hair done and she looked great. And so I said, yeah, let's just do some portraits, you know, set up some lights, blah, 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 blah. So I've got a stack of photos, you know, maybe 30 odd photos of Kath. So what I can do with my keywords is I can type in as a first keyword, Kathy Williams. And then I put a space, and then I put the right arrow, two keys to the right of the M key on your keyboard, right? Hold down the shift key and you push that button, the one above the full stop. And what that does is that creates a hierarchical differentiation, I guess. So what I'm saying is I want Kathy Williams to be a subset of a higher level keyword. So my next keyword might be people. Okay, so what I'm doing is I'm creating a keyword of people. So what I've typed Kathy Williams space right arrow space people as one keyword. And then I would put a comma, because in the keyword field in the import dialog box of Lightroom, a comma acts as a differentiator to say, this is a completely different keyword. But using the right arrow above the full stop says the keyword I just typed should be a nested keyword underneath the keyword that comes to the right of this, you know, right arrow symbol. So what I'm doing is I'm creating a keyword of people and then creating a series of keywords which will be nested under people. And in this case, there will be a whole bunch that are Kathy Williams. But there are some of the photos that I took tonight that also had Max in them. So what I could do is select the images. Can't do it at the time of import, obviously, because some of the images have got Max, some have got Kath, some have got both of them. So what I can do is I can go back to my images after I've imported, select all the images that have Max, and then what I can do is I can go back to my keyword box and I can type in Max Williams space, hit that right arrow symbol again, and then the minute I type P, if I've got no other keywords with P, Lightroom will go, ah, you want to nest this underneath people. Of course, if I had another keyword that started with P, then it won't guess it until I give it enough letters for it to go, ah, now I know what you're aiming for. So what I can do is over the course of a year, you know, if this catalogue is only going to be a year's worth of photos, is slowly build up this nested keyword structure for all of my images. And for a guy like me who loves to travel and do landscapes, what I can do, okay, great example. Last month, up at Hayman Island for Sound Business Plan. So when I imported all of those photos, what I did was I keyworded them as Hayman Island, right arrow, Whitsundays, right arrow, Queensland, right arrow, Australia. Now, over the course of the year, I will, well, next week I'm going up to Coffs Harbour for a week's holiday. So the images I take there, I'll tag as Coffs Harbour, right arrow, New South Wales, right arrow, Australia. So the reason I want to do this is because over a period of time, I'm going to end up with lots and lots and lots of photos. And I can come back to Lightroom, and in the library module, you'll see at the top there's a library filter panel, where it says text, attribute, metadata, and none. I can go into that library filter by clicking on text, for example, and what you'll see is a new bar appear below where it said text, with the ability to search any searchable field as the default, and you'll see you can drop down and just only search keywords or only search certain fields. And then your next option is contains all, or contains words, or doesn't contain, or starts with, ends with, whatever. And then a box where you can actually put, you know, the particular keyword that you want to search for. And this is where the whole hierarchical keyword thing really pays dividends. Because let's say, you know, over the course, well, let me go to my list of keywords. So I'm now in the library module, and you'll see on the right-hand side you've got quick develop, keywording, and then keyword list. And if I expand my keyword list and I go to the Australia keyword, underneath that I have already got New South Wales, and I've got Queensland, and I've got Victoria. Now under Victoria there is only Melbourne. Under Queensland I've only got Sunshine Coast, because the Hayman Island images I was talking about before are not in the catalogue that I'm currently looking at, and that's something I need to come back to, the idea of different catalogues for different things. But under New South Wales, I have every suburb of Sydney just about, wherever I've shot, as well as different towns all across New South Wales. And there are also, you know, subsets under some of those things as well. Now where this pays off is when you get to, you know, a point where you might have a catalogue of, I don't know, let's say they're just travel images. Let's say you started a catalogue and you called it holidays, you know, and every time you went on holidays you put all your photos into that holiday catalogue. Years down the track you might go, I know I've been to Queensland, but I can't remember where I went. what you can do is come back to the, you know, library filter of text searching, type in Queensland and hit enter. And what Lightroom will do is run through and it will find every image that was tagged with a location which was nested underneath Queensland. So, you know, Hayman Island will come back for me, Hamilton Island will come back for me, the Sunshine Coast will come back for me. You know, even though I didn't have to type in Queensland every single time, because, you know, if I went to, let's say I went to Toowoomba, where I have not been recently, and I shot some photos, when I came to import them, I'd type in Toowoomba, right arrow, and I'd hit Q, and straight away Lightroom would go, you want Queensland? And I go, yep, hit enter, boom, it's done. So all of those images get tagged with Toowoomba as well as Queensland. So you don't have to then go and retype those higher level keywords every single time. Does that make sense? Hope it does. All right, I think I've explained the concept of hierarchical keywords enough. Kane, I hope that makes sense to you, mate. And by all means, if I still haven't been clear about it, drop me an email and I'll do my best to explain it some more. But hopefully you get it. Now, I did want to come back to that idea of different catalogs for different things. Why? I found, and admittedly this was on the last build of my computer, it was not on this build, I found after a while that once there were about 20,000 images in there, things started to slow down a bit. It started to become a little bit slower to search for things. And so at that point I thought, before things get out of control, let's break all this out into separate catalogs. Because at the time I just had one master catalog and every single thing was going into it. It was all my family photos, it was all my travel photos, it was the odd wedding that I shot, and then when I started doing some commercial stuff in the tourism realm, that stuff was going into the same catalog, and I started to think, do I really want all of this stuff in the one catalog? Particularly if at some point down the track I'm going to have clients coming in to look at their images. I don't want to be opening up a catalog and having the client seeing all my family photos, you know? Not that I have an issue with privacy. That is not my concern. It's just more a professionalism thing, you know? Client doesn't really want to come in to look at their wedding photos and see, you know, my lovely wife. Beautiful as she is, they don't want to see that, right? They just want to see their wedding photos. So I thought, yeah, it's probably a good idea to set up separate catalogs for the different kinds of things that I'm going to shoot. And so what I've done is with my family photos, I have a catalog which will basically cover a 5-year span. So I've got 2010 to 2014 as a catalog. And then I'll set up a new one for 2015 to 2019. Chuck them in 5-year lots. I could probably go to 10-year lots maybe, depends how much personal photography I'm going to do. I then have a separate catalog for the Sydney meetups that we do each month. So they all sit in one particular catalog. And then when it comes to commercial stuff, you know, stuff that I'm being paid to shoot, I set up a separate catalog for each of those shoots. Now, I'd be happy to hear other people's input on this, particularly those people who are working as professional photographers as their day job. What's your approach to this? Do you set up a separate catalog for every single corporate shoot that you do? Or do you have, you know, one master collection for just weddings and one master collection for corporate headshots and, you know, et cetera, et cetera? Do you, you know, break them up by subgenre? Or do you just throw all your commercial work into one catalog only? I'd be keen to hear other people's input on that. Mate, this podcast was not meant to be a how to use Lightroom podcast, Kane, but hopefully I've given you some tips there. The other thing is, You know, I asked Kane when he sent me this message, do you not have any metadata at all? And he did reply that there was, you know, some basic metadata included in all of those images, like date and, you know, probably dates about the, well, I suppose there's EXIF data, like, you know, shutter speeds and apertures and all that kind of stuff. There should be a way, Kane, that you can use the embedded date metadata to set up folders, at least as a starting point. I remember when I first got Lightroom, I did something very similar. I already had a bunch of images, you know, admittedly most of it was old film stuff that had been scanned, but I didn't really have a good folder structure in place. And thankfully I, you know, sort of cottoned onto it pretty early when I only had about 1,000 images. And so what I did was I created a folder for the 60s, and then a folder for the 70s, and then a folder for the 80s, and then I think the 90s I might have broken up into two lots of 5 years, and then around 2000 I think I then created individual folders. Well, I created a 2000 to 2010 folder, and then I put individual folders for 2001, 2002, 2003 inside that. And what I did was I went through and I manually sorted all the images that I already had at that point. Like I said, I had about 1,000 images, and that was enough of a headache. I don't envy you with 12,000 images to sort. But at least move them into roughly the decade that they were shot as a starting point. And then over, you know, succeeding weeks, I eventually, you know, went through and sort of tried to get more accurate folder, you know, names set up to represent when these things were taken. And of course, then it was a case of going through and adding metadata to those, because, like I said, they're all film scans, so there was no EXIF data. It was a case of going through and, you know, relying on memory for the most part, and adding as much keyword metadata as I could, you know. And obviously, you know, you can add keywords to multiple images at a time, even after importing, by going to the library module, putting it into grid view by pressing the G key. That will show you a grid of all of the images. Well, I was going to say in a folder, but it depends on what you're viewing on the left-hand side. I generally view folders. Yeah, and so you can choose multiple images at a time by Control-A if you want to select all of the images in there, or you can Control-click and Shift-click, just like in most other Windows interfaces, to select a bunch of images. So if there's a particular person you want to tag, just go through and Control-click every image that they're in, go to your keyword box, type in their name, hit enter, boom, it's done. Their name is tagged to all of those images in one hit. Like I said, 12,000 images, you've got a big job ahead of you, matey. I don't envy you that task at all. But it sounds like you might have some of that metadata already there. So I will have a look for you to see if there is any way of, translating iPhoto metadata across to Lightroom. And if anyone has any tips on how Kane can expedite that process, please drop me an email. At studio@audio2u.com, and I will, you know, not only flick it over to Kane, but also mention it on the next podcast. Alrighty, I think I've probably worn out my welcome with Lightroom. Lightroom 4 is great, I have to say. I am enjoying it. Was there anything else I was going to cover? I mean, there's more stuff for this podcast, but I'm just trying to think if there was anything else I was going to talk about regarding Lightroom. I got another email from Nathan Chilton, who we heard from in the last episode. And Kane, this is relevant to you too, matey. He said, "Hey Bruce, I saw that you featured my tip on adjusting your camera's clocks at the start and end of daylight saving time. I actually noticed this when you first published episode 198, and I enthusiastically showed the notes to my wife on my phone. Anyway, I thought it might be worth mentioning a related issue. Fixing the timestamp in post. I've documented my process here. And he's given me a link. The same process could be used for fixing the timestamp on your photos when you suddenly discover that you forgot to adjust your camera's clock at the daylight saving time change, and you've got thousands of photos that are an hour off. What I use it for most is synchronizing the timestamps from multiple cameras in post. Whether it's a wedding with multiple shooters, or just a simple portrait shoot with multiple cameras, syncing the clocks in post is a lot easier than trying to remember to do it at the start of the shoot. Plus, it allows you to fix the problem when you're actually sitting in front of your computer and faced with the problem. Instead of regret and frustration, it's a 2-minute fix. I know you're a Lightroom user too. I hope you or one of your listeners finds the process useful. Nathan, thanks for the email, matey. Yes, the altering the timestamp after the event is an absolute lifesaver. And I have to thank Rakesh for bringing this to my attention probably 12 months ago now, because I wasn't aware that the feature was there. And it is. In Lightroom, if you go to the metadata option on your toolbar and edit capture time, it's about halfway down the list. What you can do with this option is either on a single image or using the aforementioned techniques of selecting a bunch of images or all the images in a folder, select a whole bunch of images, click on edit capture time, and you will get a dialog box, and it says type of adjustment, and you can either adjust to a specified date and time or shift by a set number of hours for a time zone adjust, or change to the file's creation date. And you'll see that underneath it gives you a field called new time, and it shows you the original capture time and then the corrected time. So what you can do is you can, you know, just go through and, you know, depending on which of the adjustment types you choose, so that will change how you, you know, then use the second field. If you have a look at the window, you'll soon work it out. With regards to the multiple shooters on a wedding, I had a great idea, and I will confess I've not actually used this idea. It was something that came to me after the last wedding that Rakesh and I shot together. And I thought, you know, all of us photographers, these days, I would say 99% of us are using smartphones. I don't think there are too many people who are into photography in a big way, who are tech savvy enough to be listening to a podcast about photography, who are still using candy bar flip phones. There are probably not many. I think most of us have migrated to, you know, either iPhones or Android phones. And what I was thinking would be a great idea, and again, it comes back to what you said, Nathan, about remembering to do it, but what would be a good idea would be to get your smartphone and bring up the clock, right? And preferably a clock that displays second information as well as hours and minutes. So probably a digital clock on screen rather than an analog clock on screen. And get all of your photographers to actually, you know, take a photograph simultaneously of the screen of your phone displaying the hours, minutes, and seconds. Now, whether the clock on your phone is accurate or not is irrelevant, right? It doesn't matter if it's a minute out or whatever. If two or three photographers all photograph the screen of your phone at the same time, you know, down to the second, at least then when you came to, you know, merge all of the images supplied by, you know, all of the cameras involved in the shoot into the one catalog ready for post-processing, you could use that one image to at least synchronize all of the images, because you could then see exactly what the internal clock on the camera was set to at the time that it took the image of your phone displaying you know, the hours, minutes, and seconds. Just a thought. Like I said, never actually done it, but it would seem to me to be a great way to make sure that you have actually got all of your cameras involved in a shoot perfectly synchronized down to the second. So if it was critical to get, you know, a chronological sequence of every image shot, particularly at a wedding, you know, where that sort of stuff is kind of important, you know, that all of the images line up, you know, so that the images from one camera aren't showing the, you know, the bride still getting ready while the images from the next camera are already showing, you know, the bride walking down the aisle, as it were. Just a thought. Alrighty, I think I have rattled on long enough. For everyone who has been with this podcast right from the start and is still with me, thank you. I appreciate your continued support. I still hear from people occasionally via email, not a lot, and you know, quite a bit through Facebook, but I recognise that not everybody's on Facebook. But yeah, thanks for being with us for a couple of hundred podcasts. And we will do what we can to keep it interesting. And here's to another 200 more. Any questions, anything you want to ask, whether it be Lightroom or anything else, please drop me an email, studio@audiotu.com. And until I speak with you next. Oh, that is the other thing. I did mention it briefly. I am away next week, so there won't be a podcast next week. It is Kath's and my 10th wedding anniversary. My God, I cannot believe that we've racked up 10 years already towards the end of next week. So we're going away for a week. We're going to go and do a bit of camping for a few nights. And then we're going up to a nice resort at Coffs Harbour for a few nights as well. So, yeah, so no podcast next week, but should be back the week after that. All right, until I speak with you next, take care.
Shutters Inc., another audiotou.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email studio@audiotou.com.